Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. I am here with Michael Zhang, who is the author of the book Entrepreneur Wealth Management Made Easy. So thank you so much for being with us today, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Miranda.
Now, one of the things that you talk about in the book about wealth management is you talk about six pillars. We're going to focus on three of them today, but if you could quickly give us what those six pillars are, just to give people a little taste of what they can find in the book. But what are those six pillars? And then we'll go into three today.
Yeah, the book is written for entrepreneurs. And so the six pillars applicable specifically to entrepreneurs. For ordinary folks like ourselves, then maybe three of the six are very, very applicable. The number one pillar is investment. Okay. The second pillar is tax mitigation. The third pillar that is applicable to everybody is, I call it heir protection, meaning how to protect your children, your spouse, in the unlikely event that something bad happened to you. And the fourth pillar is asset protections, how to protect your wealth from lawsuit, for instance. Number five is a business succession, how to pass on your business to the next generation and then capture the equity. And then the last pillar is charitable planning, how to give away your money, but also benefit yourself tax-wise.
All right. Very cool. So that's some really interesting stuff. So definitely considering the book. But let's go ahead and talk about some of these pillars of wealth management. And let's start with investing. How do you make good investing decisions? I mean, we know we need to invest. We know we need to get moving on it. But how do you make the right investing decisions?
I would say keep in mind two words, basically. Keep it simple and keep it automatic. So keep it simple, I mean by don't invest in complicated stuff, complicated venture that you barely understand. Stick with an index fund or stick with a target date fund. And then don't watch the news, don't follow Jim Cramer's and then try to get in and out market frequently. Just stick with it. And that's the right way to do investment. And keep the cost low as well. The second part is to make it automatic. Because a lot of time, after we get a paycheck, we spend it, and then at the end of the month, we think about whether we should save $100 or not. What should we do about, should we spend it or should we save it? Don't do that. It drains your mental energy. The better way to do it is set an amount that you're comfortable with, whether it's $100 or $200 or $500 or $5,000, whatever amount that you can afford. Set it aside and create an automatic investment. Many brokerage firms now offer that program to you. They call it automatic investment or automatic wealth builders. Once you set it up, you can forget about it. And then every month, the brokerage firm would take the $1,000 from your bank and invest for you. And you can just forget about it. And then in a few years, you would have a little nest egg built up in your brokerage account. So keep these two words in mind. Keep it simple and keep it automatic.
Yeah, and I really like that myself. As many listeners know, I am a hardcore indexer. I'm all about that indexing life. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that because it's inexpensive, it's simple, and you don't need to expend a lot of time and mental energy trying to figure that out. So next we talk about, you know, you mentioned tax mitigation. So what do people need to know about investing and taxes? What should they keep in mind?
Yes. Before we go to sort of investing and tax, which is a sort of big subject, I want to just remind everybody that there's two types of tax. One is a taxation on our labor income, and the other is taxation on our capital, on our money. It's interesting in our country, the taxation on labor income is much higher than the taxation on money, right? That's why some politicians has a tax rate of 15%, but most of us paying like 35%, 40%. So why this is important? Recognize this and you should begin to build your asset early on. Because once you get to like 500K, even 100K or 500Ks and let the money earn money for you, you're in a better position than working so hard and try to make more money. Because whatever more money you make, you have to pay more tax. So build good assets as soon as possible and let the assets make money for you, because the money made from your assets will be taxed at a lower rate. It's a long segue. But going back to investment and tax, there's two types of investment account. One is the taxable account. The other is the tax-deferred account like IRA accounts and 401k accounts. So be mindful about what assets input in those accounts. Like REITs, investment trusts, or corporate bonds, those assets that produce high interest income or high dividend incomes, those assets should be put in the tax deferred accounts. Other assets that have high growth potential but low interest income or low dividend incomes, they should be put in the taxable account. So be very mindful of what type of accounts should hold what type of assets.
Yeah, I think it's really important to keep that in mind, because a lot of the time we forget, what you were saying about income is really important to realize too, is we are taxed on that income and the taxes kind of pile on, and Social Security taxes are actually quite regressive. When you look at it, understanding, okay, which assets are going to do me the most good being tax deferred, which assets are going to do me the most good if I have to pay the tax on it today. And then when you talk about long-term and short-term capital gains, that makes a huge difference as well. So being aware of that makes a huge difference. So what else did you have to say about taxation?
Yeah, this is the third point I want to get across to your audience, is be aware of the fact that capital gains taxes are taxed at the point that you sell your assets. So if you hold your assets for 20 years, you get taxed only once at a long-term capital gain tax rate, which is lower only once in that 20-year period. But if you turn your investment, if you hold your investment for only 6 months, then you have to pay short-term capital gains twice a year, right? What would you prefer? Short-term capital gain is higher already than long-term capital gain. On top of that, if you turn your investment, you end up paying more frequently at a higher rate as opposed to paying only once every 20 years at a lower rate. So be very mindful of the impact of tax.
And finally, what advice do you have as far as heirs protection and what you can do about your investments and kind of passing those on?
Yes, it's a subject a lot of people ignore as well, because it's about they're passing away. So people sort of ignore this arrangement. I came to my business is because 15 years ago, my family doctor out of the blue called me and told me that he couldn't be my doctor anymore. I asked him, what's going on, doc? And it turned out that he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he only had a few more months to live. And he told me that I'm the only finance guy he knew. So he asked me for help. And he was totally not prepared for that. And as a result, that his family has to live a reduced lifestyle after he passed away 3 months later. So after that, I always remind my clients to make arrangement to make sure that whatever happened to them, their children, their spouse, their children are taken care of financially. So this is not a subject that has to do with investment per se, but it is a subject that everybody, as long as you have children, if you don't have children, then it's not a big issue at all. But once you have children, once you have non-adult children, then you should take care of that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. If you could just tell our listeners real quickly where they can find you online or where they can get your book.
Oh, to get my book, they can just go to Amazon and search my name, Michael Zhuang. My last name is spelled Zhuang. And if they're interested in my service, they can go to my website called mzcap.com. There they can get a 1 hour free consultation, basically. I call it a second opinion review. I do it basically pro bono as a service to society. And of course, I benefit from that, because once in a while, someone who uses service become my client. What they take away is some clarity about their financial situations and any shortfalls and any gaps in their personal finance arrangement. Many of them know how to deal with it themselves. So yeah, just go to my website and get to know me. And if you feel like you have some thing unclear about your personal finance, you can get my free service.
Hey, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We've had a great run over the last 5 years. We've had lots of great guests over that time. Guests like Joe Saul Sehy, Susie Orman, Art Laffer, Bert Malkiel, Peter Schiff, and more. We've had lots of great content, too. Like what happens when somebody steals $500,000 from you? Tax loopholes for the rich. Investing like a billionaire. Why men and women approach investing differently. How to outlive your money. Tax liens, peer-to-peer lending, asset protection, and more. And we've had lots of great questions from you, our audience, as well. And we really appreciate it. But now we need your help. We want to know what you want to listen to. What topics, guests, and content you value most. This is your chance, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We don't ask frequently, but when we do, the door is wide open for you to give us your thoughts, good, bad, and ugly. What do you want to hear more of? What do you want to hear less of? All this helps to make a better show for you. So many of you have already provided your feedback, and it's going to make an exciting 2019 of great content ahead. We're going to be closing the survey soon, so make sure you leave your feedback now. If having a say in your favorite podcast isn't enough, we're also going to be providing monthly promotions to anyone on our email list. The recent promotion was an overwhelming success. We had lots of positive feedback and input from our listeners. We're going to continue to create great shows for you, and they'll be focused on the content that you suggested. Each month, we're going to have a new promotion. We can't tell you now quite what we have in store for you because we want it to be a surprise, but we know that you're going to be excited. We have some special opportunities that money can't buy. We're excited to bring these to you through the year 2019. But in order to qualify for these promotions, we need to hear from you. In order to qualify, you're going to need to sign up for our email list first. When you do, you're going to have an additional chance to win by completing our Money Tree Podcast survey. Go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to give us your feedback and the additional chance to win. We'll be posting the name of the winner on our website. So if you entered the promotion, please check the website to see that you've won. We also have great shows lined up in the near future with some special guests that you're not going to want to miss. I can't wait to publish these interviews. They're very exciting. So go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to sign up, and we'll enter you into our monthly promotion. Thanks again for listening, and remember, invest in your life.
All right. Welcome to the panel portion of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Today, we have a couple of new guests that we haven't seen before on the podcast. So it's super exciting to have them here. Kara, welcome to the show. Can you please tell our visitors a little bit about what you do?
Sure. Hi, y'all. My name is Kara Perez, and I'm the founder of Bravely Go, a financial education company for women. We do pop-up events around the country, and we have a thriving online community. And I come at money from a place of not having any and not having any financial education. That's sort of my background. And it made me really passionate about trying to build up not only financial education in the communities around me, but just encouraging people at large to be more transparent about money and to feel more confident about their money.
Very cool. And I can relate. I am also a regular person who started with no money who's doing this. So that's awesome. Debbie, can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes. Good morning and thank you. Yes. And my name's Debbie Todd. I am a licensed CPA and just like Kara, also very, very passionate about financial literacy and money wellness in our community. I have a licensed CPA firm as well as teaching a core financial literacy program that we've been doing for the last 15 years that we do in live events and also are branching out into the online space. Part of our focus is not only on taking a family approach, but also on having it to where we actually can utilize fun and innovative games and techniques that will actually engage the children. So we truly do make it a family affair.
That is very cool. And that's one of the things we're kind of missing in today's financial world is that kind of family approach to money. And as always, Kirk is here. I get to say it to you now. Kirk is always here.
I'm here, Miranda. Yes.
It's my turn.
Yes. I'm the person you hear in every other episode. So,
and we're glad of it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, if for all of you that are listening the first time, this is my name is Kirk Chisholm. I'm a wealth manager at Innovative Advisor Group. We provide wealth management services. In many ways, we focus on the emotional side of money with people, which is part of our industry that I think doesn't get enough time and energy spent. But our niche focus is also alternatives held in self-directed IRAs, whether that's real estate, gold, cryptocurrency. That's kind of a niche that we've carved out for ourselves, and that's kind of what we're known for.
Very cool. So we all come kind of at wealth from different places, so it'll be interesting to see how this goes. So in our interview, we talked a little bit about three of Michael Zhang's six pillars of building wealth. But what I'm really interested in from this group is, you know, what is your number one tip for building wealth? What is your number one suggestion when people want to build wealth, when they want to kind of get more money, as they say? What is your number one tip? And let's go ahead and start with you, Debbie. What is your number one tip for building wealth?
Well, I would have to say, hands down, my number one tip for building wealth really just starts with the mindset that you have and planning for it. It has been my experience that if you don't decide to change your money habits and how you're spending your money and how you're earning your money, that you won't be able to achieve your goals. So I like to take a longer term approach to it to make sure that people can decide what their particular goals are and then set up strategies on how they can achieve it.
That's a really good point. That mindset is a piece that so often we don't really think about when we're talking about wealth and money. We're a lot of the time just focused on, oh, how can I earn more? But we don't think about, you know, what are the mental blocks that are holding you back? What about you, Kara? What is your number one tip for building wealth?
Number one tip is to increase your income. So like I said, I come from a place of not having very much money. I was very low income for a large chunk of my 20s, like sub 20K a year income levels. And, you know, you can only frugal so far. At the end of the day, the more money that you have coming in, the more you'll be able to do things like invest, like diversify. But to Debbie's point, I also always tell people, you have to be organized about it. You have to have a plan for it. And you have to understand, first, I'm going to get myself on a budget, then I'm going to pay off my debt, then I'm going to focus on investing, then I'm going to diversify investments, et cetera, et cetera. But if you don't understand that path to walk, it doesn't really matter how much money you're bringing in. But first, you have to have money before you can do something with it.
No, I really like that point because so often, you know, when you're reading like personal finance advice, the first thing they tell you is like, cut your expenses. But like you said, and I've been there too, where there is only so much you can cut before you're to the point where it's like, you can't cut anymore. And I've actually worked with people in the past where they're just like, what can I do? And I'm just like, I'm sorry. I don't have a good way to say this, but I'm sorry, but you need to make more money. You know, whether finding ways to earn more, finding ways to boost that income really does make a difference in the long term. Kirk, what about you? You are a wealth manager. What is your number one tip for people to get that wealth to manage?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Unfortunately, Debbie took mine. So I think the mindset.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. That's all right. You did it better than I did. So
come up with something new, Kirk.
No, I mean, I do want to reiterate because I talk about this a lot in the show. The mindset's really important because if you don't have the right mindset, you're not going to get there. And I also agree with Kara's too, is that income's important. So when we look at our kind of planning, we look at it in kind of in four quadrants. We look at it as tax planning, cash flow planning, estate, and investing. And all of those four are important. There's not really one that's more important than the other. But when you're building wealth, what I usually tell people is invest in what you know. Now, if you're a real estate investor, that might mean investing in real estate, not in tech companies. Or if you're, you know, a doctor, maybe you would be investing in something in your industry that you know really well. Like I know a doctor who knew MRI equipment really well. So he bought MRI equipment and leased it out to a hospital. Thought that was a very creative way to do it. But, you know, I think it's more important if people are building wealth from an investing standpoint that they focus on areas that they know and not just try to pick a bunch of mutual funds and hopefully they go up. Because buying,
hey,
you know.
That's my style, man.
Well, you're an indexer. I'm talking about mutual funds, Miranda.
Oh, okay.
I'm not pointing you out too much, but my point is buy and hope is not a strategy. I mean, Miranda has a strategy and indexing is a strategy. But what a lot of people do is they just kind of hope the market pulls their assets up. But you know, that's not generally a great strategy, because if things happen and you don't know why they're happening, then you don't know how to correct them. So I think if you don't understand what you're doing, then you should find somebody. But sometimes in investing in what you know is more to Kara's point of investing in ways to increase your income. Now, maybe that means starting a business. Maybe that means enhancing your career, your professional aspirations, so you make more income. But investing what you know is not just investing. Sometimes it's also investing in yourself.
I kind of want to look at this increase your income thing just a little bit more. And Kara, I mean, you've talked in the past about the importance of recognizing that not everybody has the same access to resources. You're very intersectional in your approach to money. So what are some of the things that people can do to kind of increase that income? Like, what suggestions do you have to folks who are in that situation similar to yours, who may be lacking some of that privilege that makes it easy? How do you increase your income?
I will say, just in my own personal experience, asking and trying are the most important things. So when I was making $18,000 a year, my two main jobs were catering and working as an MMA gym receptionist. So I made $9 an hour at the gym, and catering, I made $12 an hour. And I had worked with the catering company for a year, and I just had never asked for a raise because I felt like they would give me one at some point. And then I was like, frankly, screw this. I'm going to go in and get a raise. And then I made it a habit to ask for a raise every ensuing 8 months. And I took myself from $12 an hour to $19.50. So first things first, if you have a W-2 job, just ask for more money, whether that's every 8 months or annually, however you can in your company. And then I also think trying. So whether that's picking up a side hustle or starting your own business or in some way generating more income for yourself is hugely important. A lot of us self-reject. A lot of us will say, no, I'm not going to apply for that new position because I don't feel qualified, or no, I'm not going to send that email asking for a raise because I'm embarrassed. And it's like, just try. The worst thing that will happen is they will say no. The second worst thing is they'll just ignore it. The best thing that happens is you have more money in your pocket.
Yeah. And I think that makes a lot of sense. A lot of the time we kind of forget that sometimes it doesn't have to be as hard as we are making it. And that can be a tough thing to remember. So I do want to kind of shift a little bit as well to one of the things that Michael talked about in our interview was taxes and the importance of paying attention to your tax situation. I know, Debbie, you have kind of a little bit of a different take than Michael had. I mean, Michael does talk about, you know, making sure you know where your assets are going, whether they're in a tax advantage plan or whatever. And that is important stuff. But Debbie, you kind of have another take on it as well. So can you talk a little bit more about the importance of understanding taxes as you build wealth?
Yes. I think Kirk and I probably deal with this, you know, in many, many aspects, and especially with the implementation of the new tax law. I mean, it really did change the tax landscape for virtually 85% of the people in the country. One of the things that I like to share with my clients is planning is key. It really is. And there's no one size fits all, which is really kind of, people like to think they can go out and look on Google or get some of these other places where they'll get information. And they don't always understand how the various nuances of the tax law, whether it be the federal law or your state and local laws, that impact each person differently. So like where Kirk comes in and talks about the planning and in the four quadrants, I mean, that is just really what it needs to be. And my experience has been when dealing with folks in their financial recovery realm, people do not understand that paying taxes and fees is the single largest expenditure that you will have in your working lifetime. You know, as we're listening and what Kara says, right, about our income and how much you have to spend, you can't spend your gross income. You can only spend your net. It's cash. The cash that you have is what you actually get to operate with and spend to realize your goals and to live your life. So it really, really is important to figure out what your total tax obligation is and what you're going to be paying at all these levels. And then as you're making decisions to either be in financial recovery or to increase your wealth or to start to plan some of your longer term financial goals, what the tax implications of those are. And those are going to vary state by state. And I think just as a classic example, when you look at some of the states with the new tax law for federal purposes for SALT, which is state and local taxes, many, many people this tax year really found out that they had a dramatic shift in what they ended up owing for taxes just because of that one change. And if you don't take the time to plan for that or talk to somebody who understands what your situation is, you're at a risk of ending up owing more taxes, which means you have less disposable income and less money to invest and to build your wealth and to take care of the things that are important to you and your family.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I like how you point out that like taxes and fees, all of those things, that kind of takes away from it. They are things that you have to pay. Whenever you invest, there's going to be a fee, whether it's a transaction fee or a management fee or both. You're going to have to plan for that. And you have to realize that, you know, your gains are going to have to be able to overcome that. And taxes are a part of life as well. And yes. So being able to like look at that, plan ahead for that and say, all right, how can I be the most tax efficient in what I'm doing? It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it does.
So Kirk, when we're talking about wealth and growing wealth, what is the place of a financial professional in this? So we're all at different places. I probably am not in a place where I like have enough assets where I'm like, oh, I need to get a professional wealth manager. But at what point do you see a professional to help you move forward with building wealth or make different decisions?
It's going to be somewhat dependent upon the person. So some people are, I call them kind of self-directed do-it-yourselfers. I think a lot of people can benefit from getting advice from a professional, somebody who's good at it. I mean, there's obviously good and bad people out there, but assuming that they're good, you know, you really look at it from two ways. They're do-it-yourselfers. They're always going to want to do it yourself. I am one, so I understand how these people think because I am that way. There's always this exchange, right? Because even if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you're exchanging your time. So even if you're good at investing, do you really want to be spending your time doing that? So that's one question, right? Because I work with a lot of smart clients. I work with some that work at hedge funds. Like they're probably smarter than I am in many ways. But they work with me not because I'm smarter than they are. They work with me because I offer a different perspective. They work with me because they don't have time. You know, I offer something different. Like there's many reasons why people would work with a financial professional. There's not just one singular reason. And I think that what people have to figure out is the amount of time that they're spending worth it for them. And it's not only the time, but it's the stress, right? Because when the markets go up, we all feel like heroes. We all feel like we're geniuses. But when the market starts to turn around, all of a sudden, you know, your life gets turned upside down because you're managing your own portfolio and you've got to deal with the risk management at that point. So unless you're comfortable with the market going down 10, 20, 30, 40%, then you need to either come up with a strategy that makes you sleep at night, or you need to find someone else who can do it for you. So what I find is that point of transition between where someone's doing it themselves and where they need a professional, it's different for everybody because some people never want to deal with their investments. And so that ends up coming earlier on in their career. And some people, it comes later because they've become more successful or they've had enough time or they have very little time in their careers. So they're, you know, running a company or they're professional and they don't have the time. And so for each person, it's going to be a little different. But when people hit that point of running out of time, that's usually where they call and say, I can't do this myself anymore. I need some help. I guess lastly, I'll point out these markets are different than they were 20 years ago. And they're a lot harder to understand even for people who've been doing this for 40 years. You see some of the smartest hedge fund managers are retiring because I think even Stan Druckenmiller said this. He said, the markets don't make sense to me anymore. You know, when that happens, it kind of makes you scratch your head and say, maybe I should seek some help. So I think from those perspectives, that's probably how I would describe it from my experience.
Yeah. So you make an interesting point about not understanding the markets anymore and everything else. Like for a long time, we've talked about investing as one of the pillars for building wealth and making, you know, as a way to kind of make the most of your money. So let's talk about how do you protect that? So now you've built some wealth, you're working on building more wealth. How do you protect that? How do you keep that from disappearing? And let's go back to you, Kara. What do you do when you're trying to protect your wealth or the wealth that you've built so far? How do you protect that?
Whew, such a great question. One that has kept me up at night.
It keeps us all up at night.
I think the first step is always diversification. You don't want to have too much in one basket. So whether that's different types of stocks and funds that you're buying, or you have real estate and you have stock market investments, whatever the path is that is right for you. I also think, and this to me ties back to the mindset, but education and information is so powerful. And there are so many people out there who, like I said earlier, they self-reject or they say like, oh, taxes are so hard. They're so complicated. I can never understand them. But I think just beginning to say, I'm someone who can understand taxes, and then just learning a little bit over a long period of time so that when you're in conversation with your accountant or your CPA or what have you, you understand the terms they're using. You understand the choices that the two of you are making together for your finances. I think that is such a huge aspect of protection because, yeah, the world has really changed. Work has really changed. The markets have really changed. And I assume they will only continue to change. So trying to keep abreast of that as best you can and just to have a little bit of skin in the game in terms of education, I think is a huge, huge part of protecting yourself.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, a lot of the time we don't think of education as a way to insulate yourself or to move forward or to find out new ways of protecting yourself or making more money or building more wealth. So that's a really good point. Let's go next to Debbie. What are some ways that you recommend that people, as a CPA, what can people do, right? What can people do to protect their wealth?
Well, I think that both Kara and Kurt really hit it on the head. And I think what we're all talking about here is it really has to do with planning and thinking about it and really understanding what you think you know and what you don't want to fool with and just starting to take those steps because building wealth is typically, I think this is where some folks get a little bit, they get a little anxious as well as they get frustrated, is wealth building doesn't happen overnight. As much as anything else in life, it's going to be a slow day in, active, keep working on your process. And so as you're thinking about your wealth, it comes back to your own individual situation. As Kirk stated, it's not going to be look the same for anybody else. It's your plan. It's what goals are important in your life. And it really is about keeping those things in mind. And as Kara said, not being afraid to learn, because that's really the heart of why I left government to come in and go back into the private sector to help educate families, because that's what I saw as a huge need. I think that we could take some simple steps to understand just basic financial principles and guidelines and then take those in our improved mindset and say, these are the steps that I want to take. And so I think that being mindful of your own position and where you want to go and committing to taking those steps is probably one of the best ways to protect your wealth, because you're doing the steps that are important and make sense to you and your family.
Yeah, I think that's really important to take a step back, look at that and say, okay, how is this going to work for my family? A lot of the time, we read what other people are doing. We read what the experts say. We read what the gurus are saying. And we're like, oh, well, this applies to my situation. Or we say, oh, well, it worked for so-and-so. It has to work for me. And this isn't always true. So I really like this idea of stepping back and saying, okay, what matters most to my family? Where are, you know, how are we going to manage this as a family and in our particular situation?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so true.
So finally, Kirk, you've talked about this in the past. As you go forward and you manage wealth for other folks, how do you protect that wealth? How do you keep it from slipping away?
You know, when we're talking about wealth preservation, it's obviously different from growth, right? You know, we started talking about growth of your wealth, which is a very different mindset. For most people, it takes up most of your adult life. Wealth preservation is very different. When people hit a certain amount of assets, you kind of get to this point where you have enough and it's not really about growing it anymore. It's about keeping it. And the IRS, well, the IRS doesn't send you a letter saying, hey, you're rich. Congratulations. Oh, they do, but it's usually in a tax letter. It's not a...
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah, it's not a congratulations letter.
Yeah, it's a send us a check letter.
But it's one of those things like when you have a certain amount of money where you do have enough where you can technically retire or you become independently wealthy, if you will, or financially free, then it's really about protecting it and coming up with a system to make sure you don't lose it, right? Because you've worked really hard to gain this money and you've worked hard to build it. The last thing you want to do is lose it by doing something stupid, which we all do something stupid, so you know it happens. I mean, the 2000 tech bubble, the real estate bubble, like these things were people being greedy and you know going to excess. If people had taken those instances and said, "Hey, let me try to take some risk off the table. And what we do as a firm, like one of the pillars of our firm is risk management. That's one of the most important things you can do. Whether you're growing money or whether you're preserving it, risk management is really high in the scale. And it's not just about investment risk management. It's about, you know, the underlying parts of the investment too. It's not just saying, oh, this investment's cheap or it's expensive. It's also about, is it a good investment? Is the sector good? Is the global economy going in that direction? Like, there's a lot to it. But for what we focus on as a firm is really, the way I would describe it is, we look at all the risks of the investment and we mitigate as many of them as possible. And if there are risks left over after we mitigate the rest of them, we have to figure out, are we comfortable with these risks? And if we're comfortable with them, we can sleep at night, then that's okay. Because you can't mitigate all of them, but you can do your best to minimize as many as possible. So wealth preservation, a lot of it is risk management. If you look at people who are tens of millions of dollars, most of them are not trying to become billionaires because it's not necessary. Like, at a certain point, you don't need more money to be happy. The quicker people realize that, the better off they'll be. Because I've talked to people who are worth tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and people who have hundreds of thousands. And they all have the same point of view. If I only had 30% more, I'd be okay. But how could you only need 30% more if you're worth $100 million? Like, why do you need 30%? But it's this concept of more that people need that I think is important. So I think being mindful of that is also very important.
Yeah, that's a really good point. A lot of the time we forget that, you know, hey, are we in a decent place? What is enough for me? You know, as we all know, one of the reasons I'm an indexer is because I don't care if I beat the market. I'm just like, I'm cool. Like, keeping pace with the market over time is good enough for me. So I think understanding that about yourself makes a big difference. So thank you so much for joining us today. Let's go ahead and real quickly recap where folks can find each of our panelists online. Carol, we'll start with you. Where can people go to find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on the internet at www.bravelygo.co, not .com. I don't know where that will take you. I'm most active on Instagram, which is WeBravelyGo, and Twitter, which is @BravelyGo.
All right. Very cool. What about you, Debbie? Where can folks find you online?
Well, they can find me online at my blog, which is onehourimpact.com. That's the numeral one, HOURIMPACT.com. Or they can actually, if anybody's interested in fun learning for children, they can find us at rubystroupe.com. That's RUBYSTROUPE.com. And I'm most active on LinkedIn and Facebook.
All right. Very cool. And Kirk, where can people find you?
Yeah, you could typically find me anywhere in social media. I'm pretty easy to find. Certainly, you can go to my website, innovativewealth.com, where we talk about all different things that pertain to wealth management, more specifically the self-directed IRA aspect, which we're experts in. And certainly you can always find me every week on the show as well.
All right, very cool. And of course, you can find me at plantingmoneyseeds.com and on Facebook and the Twitter and all those other places at M. Markwit. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Please remember to subscribe so that you get a fresh episode every single week. Also, please leave us a comment, leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. That way we can grow the reach of our podcast and get more awesome guests for you to listen to and learn from. And don't forget also that you can check us out on moneytreepodcast.com, where you can find out more information about our panelists and get links to the resources that might have been mentioned in this show. So help yourself get educated about money and investing. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.